One of my guests this afternoon was on Women's Focus with me 1 year ago in September, just a couple of months before the 2020 elections. Kayla Griffin is the Ohio campaign state director for the organization All Voting is Local, which she'll tell us about in just a few moments. With a background in community organizing, she advocates for voter rights and election protection. I invited Kayla to join me again this year because of all the messing, and yes, that's what I said, messing with voters' rights across this country that has taken place in this last year and continues in lots of states. And I thought it would be interesting to talk to someone about what is specifically happening in her state and giving us, in her case, an upfront, close-up view of the status of the vote in Ohio. So welcome, Kayla. It's good to have you back again.
Thank you, Carol. Glad to be here with you.
Yeah, a lot has happened between September 2020 and now. And as I mentioned, I thought of you because of the many anti-voting rights bills being introduced all over the U.S. But before we get into that, for our listeners who are not familiar with All Voting is Local, if you could please tell us about the organization, kind of a general overview, its purpose, its mission.
Yeah, so All Voting is Local was founded in 2018. We are an organization, a campaign that is out of the Leadership Conference for Civil and Human Rights. And our mission is to fight to remove discriminatory barriers to the ballots so that democracy is achieved for everyone, so that everyone has access to the ballot. We understand that there are so many different groups of people that face barriers. And we really are looking at how on the state and local level, we can push change to remove those barriers to the ballots.
Okay, great. What is your role as Ohio campaign state director for All Voting is Local?
So as the state director, I am tasked with understanding what's happening in Ohio, understanding how our state and local laws and implementation of those laws will impact Black and brown voters, mm-hmm. voters with disabilities, voters who are incarcerated, and even young voters. We often don't have the conversation about young people who face barriers to the ballots. And so we are really looking at Ohio law, looking at the implementation of the law, looking at the gaps that we have here, and trying to make sure that we see equitable change and inclusion, and that our lawmakers and our administrators are making sure that they're keeping people in mind when it comes to things like digital access, when it comes to things like long wait times. This is what we are doing here in Ohio.
Wow, that's a lot, and it's really excellent. I was thinking about what we were talking about last year, and we did talk about quite a bit, and I remember you bringing up something about Ohio purging voters from the rolls. So I was wondering if you could talk about that and who were purged and under what pretense. And I'm sure many of us can imagine which populations have been impacted, but if you can just give us some detail on that.
Absolutely. So in Ohio, we have what the government likes to call a voter maintenance procedure. We called it the purge because the first time around that it happened, there were so many people who were on that list who should not have been on that list. And the way that Ohio law works is that if it's a use it or lose it. So if you don't use your right to vote, if you don't exercise your ballot and go to the ballot for two federal elections, then you can be removed from the polls if you're not responsive. And so what we see is that a lot of folks, you know, they might get a letter in the mail, they get this little postcard in the mail, and it asks, hey, do you still live at this residence? And if I'm reading it, I'm thinking, well, of course I live at the residence. You sent me a postcard here at this residence. But if you are not responsive, and if you decide not to vote, then they can remove you from the rolls. The Secretary of State is in charge of maintaining the rolls. This becomes problematic because there are people who may get the letter and, you know, just disregard it. There are folks who, for whatever reason, do not want to vote in upcoming elections. But we don't think that your right to vote should be removed because of that.
Well, how long has this been in force, the fact that if you haven't voted in two elections, you can be taken off the rolls?
We had the first major removal in 2019. We had the second one at the end of 2020. In 2019, there were upwards to 400,000 people who were removed off the rolls. At the end of 2020, in December of 2020, there were about 100,000, a little over 100,000 folks who were removed. What we understand is that there has to be, yes, there must be some type of maintenance process so that people who are deceased are removed from the rolls. Folks who are incarcerated in prison with a felony, they are removed from the rolls. Here in Ohio, you do have the opportunity to have your voting rights restored immediately upon release, but while you are incarcerated, you are removed from the rolls with a felony. But we believe that there are better ways to do so. We think that here in Ohio, we should follow an automatic voter registration and not just automated. And you know, we can get into, you know, the nuance there. But an automatic voter registration where everyone is put onto the roll. And then it would be, I think it just would be too much like right if our governmental systems actually were talking to one another. And there was collaboration and cohesion across the government spectrum so that when someone is deceased, they are removed from the roll. So coroner's offices, whenever there's a death certificate issue, that can also be issued for to the Secretary of State. Whenever someone moves at the BOE, at the BMV, the Bureau of Motor Vehicles, that information should go to the Secretary of State. As opposed to having the system now where people have to register and then they have to keep up with their registration every so often because the government is looking to remove people or looking to clean their rolls if you're not using it.
One of the things that really gets me is when I hear from secretaries of states around the country and yourself talking about Ohio is when I hear about how many people have been purged from the rolls. You know, with the 20 election, November 2020, and Trump running for re-election, accusations on their end of fraud were thrown about in so many states, especially when the results started rolling in, which is not the results they wanted to see. Did the purging back then impact that election in Ohio?
Well, let's say this. In Ohio, we are an interesting state right now because of the census data and the redistricting lines. We are having, you know, these really interesting conversations about redistricting and drawing the lines. But we are a super majority with the Republican Party. And I should say that All Voting is Local is a nonpartisan organization. We work for the removal of barriers for all folks, not just one party over the other. But I should say, you know, we have a supermajority, and Ohio went red. By and large, we voted for former President Trump, and he won this state. And there was not rampant talks of fraud or election fraud or anything like that here in the state of Ohio. In fact, after our election and after our audit, our Secretary of State, you know, went around the country and kind of went on this little tour saying how great Ohio elections were and how we had a 99.98% accuracy rate with our audit. And he was really trumpeting how Ohio elections in 2020 was just like this emblem to be replicated. And so it's really interesting that we had such great success, but now we are getting to a place where we have introduction of legislation that could take us backwards.
Right, and we're going to talk about that legislation, but those voter purges are just such an amazing threat, obviously, for the right to vote. And generally speaking, before we get more specific about Ohio, your state, what are your feelings and thoughts about what you're seeing around the country? That's happening just about everywhere, I think, in terms of all the bills that have been introduced, like hundreds of them.
Yeah, it's really scary. We are in the fight. Like, democracy is the heart of this country, and we are really in the fight of our lives right now. We are battling for the soul of this nation. If we have such a cavalier, our lawmakers have such a cavalier take on people's right to vote, and not just cavalier, but they are waging wars across battles across the states for the right to vote, to remove people's right to vote, to make people's right to vote harder. It really begs the question, do we believe in what our Constitution says? And are we going to stand up and make America live up to the values and the principles of the Constitution? If not, we really need to have a reckoning among ourselves and among the lawmakers that we have in place right now.
This is Women's Focus, and I'm talking this afternoon with Kayla Griffin, who is the Ohio Campaign State Director for the organization All Voting is Local. We're talking today about challenges to the vote, and we will continue the conversation in just a couple of minutes. Again, Kayla Griffin, who is the Ohio Campaign State Director for the organization All Voting is Local, is here talking to us today, talking about the challenges to the vote. So let's talk about House Bill 294 in the Ohio legislature, which I read about, but I don't know a lot about. I do know it's been a battle of sorts about election laws and election changes. And I believe, as you've indicated, that it brought up lots of concerns. So if you can talk to us about that bill and what the concerns have been.
So we are, you know, really, we went through a good analysis of the bill to understand how it will impact various voters at different levels. There are some things that are in there that we've advocated for quite some time. For example, here in Ohio, if you want to apply for an early voting ballot or a vote by mail ballot, you have to send in an application, but it has to be done with a hard copy. We currently don't have an online portal that allows you to apply for your absentee ballot. And so this law would create an avenue for the Secretary of State to develop and create an online portal so that people can just go online to the Secretary of State's website or to the Board of Elections website and apply for their absentee ballot. That is a win, and we do celebrate that. But some of the things that we are concerned about is that this bill eliminates the last day of early voting, so the Monday before Election Day. And we know through statistics and reporting numbers that there are quite a bit of people who still utilize Monday early voting for their opportunity to vote as opposed to Election Day voting for whatever reason. It also eliminates the use of drop boxes, but for the last 10 days of an election. Now, this is where it gets very interesting, because drop boxes have been used in some of the more populated counties. Here in Cuyahoga County, which Cleveland sits, we have utilized drop boxes for years. Drop boxes are not just utilized to drop off your ballots, but it can be used to drop off voter registrations, information for petitions, things like that. And there has been this arbitrary attack on the use of drop boxes. What was very interesting last year in 2020 is that there was this battle, not just in the courts, but in the courts of public opinion around drop boxes all throughout the country.
Yes.
Here in Ohio, we had lawsuits. We had two different lawsuits that was taking place at the state level and at the federal level, where the Secretary of State initially, you know, he said that he was in favor of the expanded use of drop boxes, but he just didn't know whether or not he had the authority to do so, that he didn't know whether it was within his provision to let boards expand drop box usage. Well, two different organizations sued, both on the federal and the state level, to have the courts interpret the law and interpret his job description. And the courts found that it was well within his right to expand drop boxes. And instead of, you know, making an order, a judgment order to say that it has to be done, the courts, you know, relied on his previous statements that he would do it if it was legal. Well, he didn't do it when the courts came back and said that it is legal for you to do it. And I think it was a partisan fight because we saw the partisan fight throughout the country around drop boxes. Instead, what he said is, well, you can have more than one drop box, but not on the, it has to be on the same land. It has to be in the same location of the Board of Elections. Well, that makes no sense to have two or three drop boxes in the parking lot of the Board of Elections. There was counties like Cuyahoga County, again, where Cleveland, Ohio sits, where they wanted to become innovative. And they said, well, we'll partner with libraries and we'll send out bipartisan teams, a Republican and a Democrat, to serve as a drop-off location so that people can drop off their ballots. That was prohibited. Hmm. And so now what we have in this provision in 294, it says that every county can have a drop box, which when COVID started at the top of 2020, every county already got a drop box. But now it says that it can only be used to drop off ballots 10 days before the election or before the election. And that is just such an arbitrary number. To say you can only drop off your ballots 10 days. What if you received your ballot that first week of election? You cannot go and drop it off?
Well, they have to know. I mean, this is happening all over the country, so they have to know it's outrageous, and they're doing it for a reason. And what's so, what's really outrageous, and I remember feeling this way last year, is hearing about one drop box per county. And if you're talking about Texas, which they were, like in Houston, you know, and their counties are really, really large. You know, to have one drop box for a whole county.
Well, I'll see your one drop box and I'll raise you one. Here in Ohio, we only have one drop box per county, but we only have one early voting location per county. Let that sink in. So Cuyahoga County, Franklin County, Hamilton County are the most populated counties. And there are upwards to close to 900,000 voters in Cuyahoga County and Franklin County. All 900,000 of those voters, if they want to vote early in person, they are all converging on the same location.
Wow.
It is amazing when we have these conversations about disparities, because there is no reason that your largest counties should have the same or be limited to your smallest county, Noble County. Noble County has 4,000 voters and you have one drop box and one voting location. It really should be a populous situation, or if we're not going to use populous, then it should be the amount of time, the density of people that we have there, that we're judging this by. We have people, even in our, Ohio is an interesting terrain. So you have extremely urban areas, but then you have extremely rural areas that it may take you 45 minutes to get to your county seat, but you still live within that county. When we're having conversations about folks who live in rural Ohio, they face some of the same poverty issues. They face some of the same transportation issues that you would in the urban area. They might not have reliable transportation, or they may have, you know, issues that come up with digital redlining. So they may not have access to internet, and they might want to also utilize different methods of voting. And what we understand and know from the 2020 election was that 56% of Ohioans utilized early voting in some form or fashion. That means that there is a trend to start utilizing this voting season as opposed to just election day. And as I've already mentioned, you know, Ohio is a very red state. I think that it's probably very red because of how our district lines are drawn. But if we were to expand access to the ballot, I truly believe that it would also benefit folks who are in rural and suburban, ex-urban areas that are throughout our state. And it probably would help the current party in charge, but instead they want to limit access to the ballot. It really baffles me.
Right. I don't know if you just mentioned this or not. Clearly that, you know, for voters who live far from where they would have to go to drop off their ballot, would have to find a way to return their ballots.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. I did not mention that. And that's something that was very interesting, an interesting conversation that we had throughout 2020. Frank LaRose, our Secretary of State, he petitioned the legislature to allow him to pay for postage for ballots, to return ballots. The conversation and the narrative that they tried to paint was every voter has a drop-off box at the end of their driveway. It is their mailbox. And so you can return your ballot and you can put your ballot in the mail and the Postal Service will, you know, return it for you. Well, we know what 2020 looked like when it came to U.S. Postal Service. Mm-hmm. It was a mess. There were long waits when it came to receiving packages and mail. There were delays in the system. There was so much that happened in 2020 in Ohio with the receiving of ballots. There were vendor issues that there were delays, significant delays in 16 counties. 9 of those counties decided, okay, we'll just print our ballots ourselves instead of using the vendor. But the vendor got ballots out extremely late. And so if I can't go and drop off my ballot because it takes so long, then I have to utilize the mail system. The mail system is significantly slower than what it should be, particularly in the biggest presidential election that we've had. And let me add this added level of economic feasibility that we have. A few years ago, there was a book written by a sociologist called $2 a Day. It was describing how people throughout the country were literally living on $2 per day. And it was talking about the poverty rates in some of our areas throughout the country. Cleveland was one of those cities that they exposed, and they followed this family around and detailed how they were surviving off of $2 a day. Fast forward to 2020, we understand that our ballots are a little weightier. And when we have this conversation about putting it in the mailbox and, you know, making the assumption that everyone has a mailbox to deposit their ballot in, one, you have to pay for postage. And so you need 2 stamps to return your ballot. in Ohio, and I mean throughout the state because it's federal, you cannot buy single stamps. You have to buy a book of stamps. You can't go into the post office and say, hey, I just need one or two stamps. You need to buy a book of stamps. A book of stamps is relatively $12, so it's $11 and some change. You have to now decide whether or not you're going to pay for transportation through the week, food, childcare, and everything else that comes on your plate, or if you're going to take $12 and pay for stamps, which you'll probably never use, you know, only the two for the postage. The other thing that I learned while we were on the ground was that there are a great deal of people who live in various communities, and I'm in Cleveland, and so I do a lot of, you know, groundwork in Cleveland, voter registration, GLTV efforts, but I talked to folks on Cleveland's east side. They lived in urban areas, they live in the projects, they live in, you know, heavily densely populated areas, and they tell me, the Postal Service does not pick up our mail. And I was like, what do you mean they don't pick up? They said, you know, we have a mailbox that we can receive mail, but the postal Service does not collect mail from our apartment complex. So if we want to mail something, we have to go to the post office, or we have to find a blue box to drop it in. Well, we know they were picking up blue boxes all throughout 2020 as well, and those tend to not be in urban areas. And so there is really a conversation about economics and this disconnect that our lawmakers have when it comes to how easy it is to just send something in the mail. Sending something in the mail is not easy for people who don't have money to pay for postage.
Yeah, nothing much is easy. This is Women's Focus. I'm Carol Boss, and this afternoon I'm talking to Kayla Griffin, and we're talking about the vote and the obstacles to it. And what you're talking about right now, just talking about the post office, Kayla, is prime example of what people are facing all over. They're putting obstacles every step of the way. You know, it's hard to be really neutral about it. It's absolutely outrageous and infuriating.
I'd say so. I really want us to get to a place where we're asking our lawmakers, why are they implementing certain, you know, rules and regulations? Why do they want to see such restrictions?
You think you get a straight answer?
I don't know, but I think I think we need to really start, you know, calling them on the carpet for it. And even if we don't, we know how to mobilize. We know how to get behind candidates who support democracy. We know how to leverage our power at the voting box. We need to start asking some of these tough questions, because these laws that are being passed throughout the country, they're doing so arbitrarily. It's not data informed. There's no rhyme or reason. There's no benefit that it can have for the greater good. It really is a protection of their jobs, their seats, and at one particular party. There was reporting that was done. There was some leaked video from the Heritage Foundation talking about how they are just rubber stamping these laws all across the country. Mm-hmm. And the lawmakers are just passing them one to another from state to state. And, you know, folks are pushing these through. The law that happened in Georgia, we know that the governor, they were told, you know, do not wait to sign this into law. Sign it in, even if it's in the 11th hour. And it looked very sketchy. And we had a lawmaker that was arrested, a respected lawmaker that wanted the process to be open and transparent, wanted, you know, to understand why the governor was signing this bill behind closed doors in the 11th hour. She was arrested for that. And so there is really an attack on the institution of democracy. And I just find it really interesting that, you know, this country that prides ourselves on being the mecca for democracy, that wants to push democracy in other countries, we are really battling for our own citizens to be able to engage in the democratic process.
Mm-hmm.
We want automatic voter registration in Ohio. We need same-day voter registration. Ohio used to have what was called Golden Week. It was 1 week where there was an overlap where you could register to vote and vote at the same time. That has since been taken away. And so we have some hard cutoffs for voter registration. And then the very next day, you can go out and register to vote. Well, these rollbacks of days when a person can vote is impacting a lot of different communities. The lawmakers who down in Columbus, they have, you know, come out and said that, you know, we regret even having an election season. Some of us want to go back to having only one election day. Why would we take us backwards when more than 50% of the state Ohioans are utilizing early voting? We are really seeing the onslaught and the attack about against voters.
We're running out of time. To kind of close up here, well, first of all, I thank you for being here and spending the time with me. I thought it would be a really good idea to share with listeners what just one state, we're only talking about one state, Ohio, is going through in terms of the vote. I just want to ask you, Kayla, about the recent passage in the U.S. House of the John Lewis Voting Rights Act.
Yeah.
Voted for by all Democrats, mm-hmm. turned down by all Republicans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It passed on party line, which expected and anticipated. We have to push this over the hurdle in Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the filibuster is really going to stand in the way of progressive bills. And I don't even know, I would not even say that the John Lewis Voting Rights Bill is progressive. It really is trying to reinstitute some voting rights provisions that we have already had in the past. And John Lewis Voting Rights Bill literally is just going back and saying, let's add teeth back into the Voting Rights Act of 1965. It says that when the Supreme Court ruled in Shelby v. Holder that to strip provisions of the Voting Rights Act, that they got it wrong. And so we have the provisions, we have the access through Congress to rectify it and get it right. We need to see the John Lewis bill passed in the Senate. And I would urge all your listeners to call their lawmakers and call their congresspersons and say their senators and tell them that they support the signing of and the passage of John Lewis Voting Rights Bill. Here in Ohio, for our Ohio listeners, you should be calling Senator Portman and telling him that you support John Lewis Voting Rights Act. You should call Senator Brown and let him know that you support John Lewis's Voting Rights Bill. And folks ask, well, you know, I did one time or I sent a letter. Do it every single day until it comes up for a vote.
Well, thank you so much, Kayla Griffin. Power to the people.
All power to all people.
Yeah, so thanks for spending the time.
Thank you. Have a great one.
Okay, you too.